This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 61 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. As is the case every week, we have so many interesting UAV items in the news, don't we?
Yeah, this week's nonetheless. We've got exceptional drones for Hollywood delivering internet and medications by drone. Now, if we could only get caffeine from Starbucks. More rags than you can shake a flying rat at. And last, Max, we will not have to do all the talking this episode. How about you introduce our guest?
That's right. We have a guest this episode, and that's Tim Trott. Tim has a broadcast production background, but today at Tim Trott Productions, he creates video for a range of services, including real estate tours, industrial videos, training DVDs, commercials, web trade show videos, things like that. And Southern Helicam is the video production company that's owned and operated by Tim. And so we'd like to welcome you to the show, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Tim's going to help us with the news, and we've got some topics also that we want to ask Tim specifically about, and so we'll do that as we go along.
Our first story this week is the FAA approves exemption allowing drones to fly on movie sets. This was from HollywoodReporter.com. The FAA gave permission for six production companies to start using small UAS for filming movies and television commercials. And we talked about the petition back in episode 43. You could go back to that's UAVDigest.com/43, and that was in June.
That's right. We talked about the companies that had petitioned the FAA, and this is kind of breaking news as we record this. The FAA just announced this today that six of the seven exemptions had been approved. One of them didn't quite make it yet. Tim, we see that there are a number of restrictions and limitations on what this what's allowable. It's not now that any video production company can go off and use drones in commercial applications, right?
Absolutely, and it's interesting some of the restrictions that they did put on them. Although I noted also in reading through the grants, which I had to kind of speed read this afternoon, that they noted that some of the requested exemptions were not necessary, like 61.113A and B, which is a private license for hire, as one of the conditions that they said that was not necessary, which is interesting because that directly conflicts with the Airline Pilots Association that's demanding that the FAA require a commercial license for UAV operation of any size.
And a lot of the restrictions are kind of what you would expect for what we used to consider to be model aircraft under 400 feet, operate within line of sight.
No nighttime operation one of the other restrictions. I've been alerting you to my blog, and I had predicted that they would require because of hints I'd been seeing in various things the FAA has been saying in various places that you need to have at least a private pilot license. That was confirmed. They want a third-class medical certificate. That was no surprise. And also, they made a hint sometime back that you needed to log your flight time, and the Heli Video Productions stipulated that they would have 200 flight cycles and 25 hours of total time, and that was what the FAA stipulated, said, yeah, you want that, that's what you get. The interesting thing I saw was they had specified, and maybe you guys can help me out on this, they specified they were going to use an HPV 14301 multirotor. I looked it up. I can't find it.
I don't know what that is offhand. Maybe one of our listeners can help us with that. But David, are you familiar with that?
No. I, So what we'll defer to our smartest audience on the planet, and they'll tell us what it is, because I'm sure we're going to be talking about this for weeks. So, Tim, let me ask you, from your aspect, is this progress or is this regress, or where does this fall?
They had to start somewhere. This was a logical place to start. They had, it's a closed environment being a movie set. And if you'll notice, one of them, they specified 500 feet for anybody not involved in the actual production. Now that beats the heck out of the 50 feet that the AMA has and our CAPA had specified. And that's probably overkill, but you say you want something that much, they'll grant it. And I was also interested in amused by, and I commented in my blog before this thing came out, that one of the petitions from Microcopter Pro basically was insulting the FAA, and I very easily predicted that would not be among the ones that were granted.
You think a little vindictive there, maybe on the part of the FAA?
You don't preach to the FAA about aircraft safety and what they should require and expect them to smile on your request. I mean,
yeah, that's probably some sound advice.
I think my comment was that's not the way to win friends and influence the FAA.
Tim, on this issue of having a certain number of hours, cycles, and so forth, maybe the lesson for other folks who are maybe looking forward to commercial operation themselves in the future, that one of the things they should be doing now as they build their flight proficiency is to create the logbook and to start making a record of that. Doesn't that sound like a good idea?
Absolutely. In fact, the FAA actually came out and said that in so many words not that long ago. And I said, looking toward the future, what can you be doing now? Log your flight time. And I read into that very correctly that, flight hours would be a part of the requirement. Well, it makes sense. You don't apply for a driver's license and then go to driver's ed the next day.
There's one comment I've seen that the FAA granted these exemptions outside of the whole process of the six UAS test sites. And I've seen it raised as a question as to whether or not that's really appropriate. Should this have been done? Why are we going through all this activity with the test sites when the FAA can just, it's running off and granting permissions like this? I don't know if there's necessarily a conflict there.
I don't see a conflict at all. This offered them the opportunity to grant an exemption that is within a closed set of a movie set. And in other words, it's a closed environment, and they can put a requirement that you have a pilot license because a movie company can afford to hire one to sit there and supervise it. And also, like I say, it's a closed environment. They're not opening, they're not setting the dogs loose on this thing in any way. And Huerta said over and over that 333 was going to be the window that, that the things would start to happen. And this is exactly what they've done.
Right.
So I guess, Tim, one of the reasons we brought you on the show is you've done a lot of talking about 333. How about for our listeners who aren't deeply involved with the regulations, can you give just basically an overview or what I like to call the idiot's guide to what 333 is?
333 is specified as the special rules for certain unmanned aircraft systems. Now, this was part of the legislative action that the Congress took in 2012, aviation reform, whatever that it is. And it has actually two or three actual sections with two subsections. In general, notwithstanding any other requirement, no longer than 180 days, so on and so forth, the Secretary of Transportation still determine if certain unmanned aircraft systems may operate safely in the national airspace system before completing the plan for rulemaking, which is coming up in 2015. And this is what's going on. The assessment, under Section B, it says assessment of unmanned aircraft systems, which is your testing procedure. And then subsection one of that says which types of unmanned aircraft systems, if any, as a result of their size, weight, and speed, so on and so forth, do not create a hazard to users of the national airspace system or the public or a threat to the public safety. And subset of that is whether a certificate of waiver, authorization, so on and so forth, under certain titles should be required for the operation. That's consistent with what's going on. And subsection C is requirements for safe operation. If the secretary says that under certain conditions, certain unmanned aircraft systems may operate safely in the NAS. The secretary shall establish requirements for safe operation of such aircraft in the NAS, and that's precisely what they're doing for the motion picture industry. I'll mention in this also that if you read through the request, you come up with a blueprint for how the game is played. And there are several key elements that are involved. They want a pilot license. They want a medical certificate. They want a formal set of safety procedures. In this particular case, Motion Picture and Television Association came up with in response to what was the actor that got killed? Help me with that. I've got it in my notes here somewhere. But at any rate, the motion picture industry came up with their own safety rules, like if there is a blade turning, you stay away from the aircraft. Well, that would have eliminated that problem. And they've been pretty good after that. After that one accident, they have not had any fatalities from airplanes other than, I think, one photographer fell out. And that was in violation because they're supposed to have a seatbelt on. So, you know, they've done that. But the other part of it is logged flight time, which we talked about, and specify the aircraft to be used. In each of these cases, they've indicated what aircraft they want to use. And even though there's not type approval for it, the FAA has come back and said, okay, if you fly something different from that, you better tell us about it. The interesting thing about it is there's no mention of insurance. Now, I would have thought that would have been a prerequisite. Maybe they're assuming the motion picture people are going to have insurance anyway. They certainly would have to. But somewhere along the line, that's going to be a requirement.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Yeah, and you would sort of expect the motion picture industry to be well insured already.
Right.
And Tim has actually got a couple of good posts in his blog on this topic, and we'll put those in the show notes so you can follow along with that, learn a little bit more from Tim's blog. But David, I see that Google is back in the news again.
Yeah, Google wants internet broadcasting drones. And we've talked a little about this earlier. Titan Aerospace wanted their internet in the sky, and the Titan, or what they called aerostats, which are high altitude, long endurance, solar powered electric aircraft that act as internet broadcasting centers. So you're basically high flying cell towers. And it looks like Google's going forward. They got the money to do whatever they want. They're going to run tests in Mexico. And this was from Forbes.com.
In New Mexico.
And looks like they petitioned the FCC to test their technology in Santa Fe. Everybody's got a hand in the game, and it looks like Google's pushing the envelope. And it's interesting, they've also got the ground technology that we talked about with Director Bolden that they're pushing for driverless cars.
Oh, I thought of, I just remembered the person that got killed. That was Vic Morrow and a child on a set.
That's right. Now I recall. Yeah, I remembered the incident, but I couldn't remember the name. Yes.
Oh, on Twilight Zone.
Right.
It was the Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. And to note, there's been none since then. There have been, now something we need to point out, there have been no fatalities or serious injuries with regard to anybody doing any commercial UAV operation, illegal or otherwise. The only ones have been to those hobbyists who've been, you know, basically given the free pass, because, you know, we don't need to regulate the hobby people. And yet they had that one 19-year-old that got killed.
Yes.
In New York.
Right.
And there was one other that I have in my notes, if I could find my notes here. But
the other one, I believe, was the person who got hurt in the watching the race, and there was a couple down in Australia that we had. So we've got some issues with we don't know, we shouldn't be flying there kind of thing. But let's move a little bit further along, and we've got delivery of internet. Max, DHL wants to deliver parcels to an island off of Germany, and guess what they're delivering?
Well, they're delivering a couple of things: emergency packages, urgently needed packages, things like the drugs and medication and so forth. So this is about something they call a parcel copter, and they're going to start trials of deliveries to this island that's 12 kilometers off the north coast of Germany, and the only access is by boat. The German Transport Ministry and the Air Traffic Control Authority have given DHL permission to test these drones. It's about a 15 or 30-minute flight. Now, they've set up some restricted airspace for these drone flights. There won't be any other aerial activity in the flight area. There's also the stipulation that drones won't fly over any houses, and this is to address the privacy concerns that some folks have over this. So they hope to start with delivery of medication, other things like that. But they're also looking ahead to delivering packages to other remote areas or when there needs to be an emergency delivery very quickly.
Let's face it, this is a pretty hostile environment to test deliveries in. They want to talk about when the ferries aren't running, they want to be able to deliver these out to this 12-kilometer island in the North Sea, which it means that, you know, the North Sea's probably frozen and the ferries can't run. So the weather is going to be downright ugly. So if you're going to test a delivery system, this and have the little quadcopter that could get the meds across. So it seems like a valid test area.
Yeah, it does, really. Yeah, if you can, if you're successful in that kind of an environment, then everything else maybe is a little bit easier.
To quote Francis Albert, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Right, exactly.
One interesting thing I'd mention on that is that I've been studying the pilot license because I know that's going to be a requirement. The one thing they've got going in their favor is that's cold, dry air, which is, you know, for lift and everything else is excellent.
Ah, good point. All right, we've got some, some sort of a electronics story that we've been looking at here. This is Intel and 3D Robotics working together. This is from myfirstdrone.com. And this was based on something called the Edison that Intel announced earlier this year. It's a $50 computer on a chip. It runs Linux. It has a 1 gigabyte of RAM, a 500 megahertz dual-core processor, but it also has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. And as a computer on a chip, it really offers a number of different possibilities kind of for the maker culture, and 3D robotics is certainly a part of that.
Yeah, and Edison wants to add it to their PixHawk autopilot system. So it's going to be one heck of a computer on a very tiny little SUAS.
Yeah, these control systems we really are asking them to do a lot. And I'm sure, you know, Tim, with your experience, you know, you understand that and even into the future where we're likely to see other functional requirements on the onboard processor. So it's interesting that, you know, Intel is taking a look at this. It's interesting that 3D robotics is recognizing that this could be a good source of a lot of computational power.
One of the areas that computing power is going to come into play here, as I see it, is that something, and I put on my blog there that I see a hole in the system for the ADS-B, and I don't know if I need to explain that or not. And I've dealt with that in my blog in detail. You can't have a safety, a sense and avoid system without being able to sense in order to avoid. But on the other side of it, you can't do the ADS-B with 130-watt specification and the weight and everything else in a DJI or a, you know, name it.
Right.
So my proposal on that is that they come up with a low-power, low-range ADS-B in the lower. There are two frequencies for ADS-B. And the lower one, the 978, would be appropriate for low altitude, but there's no specification and nobody's required to do it. But if they want to solve the safety problem with the, you know, computing power on the aircraft, that's where it should go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as you point out, you need a couple of things. You need the compute power on the aircraft, and you need the specification that makes sense for a vehicle of that sort.
I've had some conversations with SageTech, and they've already addressed ADS-B in UAVs to a certain level. They've got one about the size of a cigarette pack, which is okay for something the size of what Gene Robinson is flying. But then again, you get down to, you know, the DJIs, and you know, that's like carrying another camera. That's not going to work.
Yes.
And again, that's intended for the high range ones. And if you're up there flying with the big guys, you've got to have ADS-B, and that makes sense.
All right, moving on. David, we've got another FAA story. We always have lots of FAA stories. And this one has kind of interesting implications, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is also sort of breaking news today as we record this. This was from UASvision.com. FAA issues requirement for all UASs to show aircraft registration numbers, not resignation numbers, registration numbers, otherwise known as N numbers or November numbers. And Tim and I got into a brief discussion about this because his comment was 12-inch high registration numbers don't fit well on a UAV. But I did throw back at him that, you know, experimental aircraft could have real or warbirds. There are exceptions. They have to display their November number, but it doesn't have to be that big.
One of the exemptions did address that, and they said something appropriate. So they're willing to back off on that 12-inch requirement where it's not. They actually, I can't quote the exact. If you read through some of the exemption granted exemptions, it does address that. So, you know, they are addressing that. The problem there is if you go to the form to request an N number, it wants to know the certified aircraft. You got another little catch-22 there.
That was going to be my next question is, did they have enough forethought before they released the press release to open up a range of November numbers for people to go get? I was thinking, you know, we had a personal couple of vanity numbers, maybe November, Indigo, Hotel, Alpha, Tango, Echo, Foxtrot, Alpha, Alpha might be a good one for a drone operator or Indigo, Lima, Umbrella, Victor, Umbrella, Alpha, Sugar.
You're actually going to call the tower with that?
Yeah. Well, what? I love UASs or I hate the FAA? You tell me. And no, I'm old school, so it would be Alpha, Fox, Fox. This is Alpha, Fox, Fox flying approach zero. So
these numbers, this requirement, this applies to commercial UAS. Currently, that means those operating under a COA. And it also applies retroactively. So existing UAS have 90 days to comply with this.
That being said, there's probably, 113 of them that are active right now? And each one of them has been granted a specific approval for their particular UAV. Now, when it goes back to the out to the public, you know, they've been granted an exemption like that HB, whatever I said before. That they've granted a one-time, you know, one model exemption for that one, but they'll have to deal with it on a type approval basis eventually.
Right.
And wait till they get into the home builds.
I hope they won't require the hobbyist UAS to be registered as well. I mean, I think that'd be going a little bit too far. So I hope they don't have their sights set on that.
One of the, who was it, Prime or somebody, did include a DJI 800 or something in their, was it Prime or no, it was Amazon that actually specifically mentioned a DJI in their request. And so, you know, if they can get a DJI type approved, then, you know, we can follow suit with the same thing. I have tried to contact DJI several times to ask them if they have been asked for or if they have submitted any samples to the FAA for certification testing, and I get no answer.
Interesting. All right. Another FAA item. This comes from NewJersey.com. FAA warning, keep your drones grounded during UN summit. Well, this past week saw the United Nations Climate Summit that was held in New York City at the UN's headquarters. And as is often the case, when you have VIPs and other activities, the FAA issues a TFR, a temporary flight restriction. And in this case, they did that over parts of New York and New Jersey. But there was something different for the first time, the FAA says. It was the first time that they made it a point to specifically mention that this TFR also applied to drone operators.
Oh, come on. Look, can I read the whole list? Because it is so much fun.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, this TFR, folks, is from for New York City. So listen to this. The following aeronautical operations are not authorized within this TFR. Special VFR operations, flight training, practice instrument approaches, aerobatic flight, glider operations, parachute operations, ultralight hang gliding, balloon operations, agriculture crop dusting, blimps, airships, animal population control flight operations, banner towing, model aircraft operations, model rocketry, and last but not least, unmanned aerial systems. Now, personally, I was really upset that I couldn't do my agriculture crop dusting and animal population control flight operations over Manhattan this week because of the UN being in. But evidently, that's so that our plane spotting friends on Airplane Geeks get to look at all sorts of international aircrafts flying into JFK that they don't get to see the rest of the year. But it is pretty comprehensive on what you can't do over Manhattan during UN week.
That's right.
On the other side of that coin, what else was this last weekend? That march March on Wall Street and whatever? The energy protest march?
Exactly.
And NBC was one of the few national networks that covered it. Did you happen to see their coverage?
A little bit of aerial video?
Yes. There was absolutely aerial footage. And if you had any question about it, if you look very carefully, the prop got into the view. So that tells me even tells me what type it was.
Okay. Well, clearly the rules don't apply to everybody, but I still was upset that I couldn't do my animal control over at altitude.
Or everybody doesn't get caught.
That's true.
So a lot of the articles we talk about get submitted by you all, our listeners, which we greatly appreciate because some of the things we've seen, but a lot of the things we have not. This next item actually came in from Tim. This is a YouTube video on a 3D pocket copter, the flying camera.
Well, it looks like it's a little bit bigger than a cigar, and according to what it said, it's about 9 inches tall. But if you read through the specification, now this was one of those Kickstarter programs, and they raised more money than they wanted. And I think one of the people of the inventors is a German, and it's two counter-rotating blades. Now, we've seen that on a lot of these monocopters. That's not unusual. And they put apparently plan to put a pair of cameras below it, which is how they get the 3D out of it. When you read into it very carefully, they expect to be selling these things for around $100 sometime in maybe May, April or May. And then they admit they've never actually built one. And the video that you saw was not actually done with one of theirs. And you can see that it's quite clearly been done from some kind of a quadcopter or something like that, because one of the views is down and the other is forward. And if you've got two cameras pointing down, you're not going to get a forward view out of it.
Yeah, it seems that this interest in drones, if you will, maybe has sort of sparked a whole lot of creative ideas in terms of devices that fly and do various things. And this is kind of another example of that. I'd have to say that this has got to fall into the hobbyist kind of category, and this is not something that the FAA or other regulatory agencies will look at and consider to be aircraft.
Well, maybe not. You know, they claim, you know, control over absolutely everything. The interesting thing about this is they claim it'll only go for 10 meters or 30 feet. And this is something that you can take the props off of it and any real estate agent can put in their pocket. So I see that as an introduction to aerial video for real estate agents, because you can operate it with a cell phone. You really can't do that much damage with something that's not much bigger than a cigar.
You clearly haven't seen Max fly his quad.
Yeah, I can't. I have a little bit of trouble.
Trees jumping out in front of you, things like that?
No, it tends to want to fall over to the right by itself frequently. So I'm obviously doing something wrong.
We'll talk about that. I can tell you what that is. Go ahead.
Good, thanks, because I need some help. All right, this last story, David, Drone Mama thought that this was like the grossest thing she'd ever seen.
You know, after the whale snot last week, this is not the first thing we've talked about. I think we had somebody turn a cat into one that we've talked about in one of the earlier episodes. But, you know, us Dutchmen, we do really stupid things. And from Geekology, the Dutch boy turns dead pet rat into flying tricopter. Well, he died. They stuffed him. They built him a tricopter around him, and now he flies. Like Rocky the Flying Squirrel, we now have Rat Tijo, The Flying Rat. And I check the show notes, folks. It's just disturbing.
It is. We want to thank Bill Rote for sending that in to us, I guess.
Taxidermy taking a wrong turn.
That's exactly what it is. All right, David, what do we got next?
From Sparked, and this was actually from both Mike Burak and Eric Larson. You're giving me all this hard stuff to pronounce tonight, Max. You know, that's my weakness in life. Cirque du Soleil and Verity Stewards have come up with a short film featuring 10 quadcopters in a flying dance performance. It's quote unquote DJI Phantom powered lampshades performing arts. It's different and it's very Cirque du Soleil.
It is. Yeah, these things fly around. They're illuminated and they are coordinated. You know, when you at the end of the video, they mention in the credits that none of this was CGI generated. That it was all these quadcopters operating in a controlled and very precise fashion. So from the standpoint of, you know, multiple, in this case, phantoms flying in a prescribed manner, I thought it was a pretty impressive show. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And there's actually, we found another video. It's one of those behind the technology videos. So it spends a few minutes giving you kind of a you know, behind the scenes look at how they did this video.
So, Tim, I guess we'll turn it over to you. Where can people find you online?
Well, the blog that I have the most fun with is southernhelicam.com, and I seem to manage to put something provocative in there about once a week, and I try to keep up with what's going on and have my own perspective on it. And in some cases, as you guys know, I kind of predicted the future.
Yeah, you've been pretty good at that. You've got quite a track record building, and so, yeah, we encourage people to take a look at Tim's blog, because there really is a lot of good thought-provoking content there. And if you haven't figured out by now, Tim has got no shortage of opinions and thoughts, and so that makes it a good stimulating read.
We definitely enjoy getting Tim's emails.
Let me mention one thing. In the blog comment that's on the Section 333 exemption, which you mentioned in the notes here, this is not the most recent one. It goes back a little, but I've updated it recently. But at the bottom of it, I've got four different questions that I'd be kind of interested in comments from your audience and my readers, and questions about various opinions on various things. So I'd be very interested to see the feedback on those.
All right, very good. And of course, we'll have that in the show notes so that you can find it easily.
It's at the very bottom of the one that's talking about here come the Section 333 exemptions.
All right, David, let's wrap it up.
So, of course, folks, we love feedback and we read it all, even though we may not mention it on the show. We do read it all. Max and I do read it all. And that you can always send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Of course, we've got a really active UAV Digest Twitter account, and that's @UAV Digest. Our website, of course, is theuavdigest.com. And of course, we're on Stitcher and iTunes. Don't forget to leave us some feedback so everybody can find us on those pages. And if you think we're doing a really good job, may we suggest you go to our Patreon page and maybe help us out so we can bring you even more quality content. And Max, maybe we should again thank our sponsors.
That's right. For this episode, our sponsors, Go Engineer and UAV Propulsion Tech. So we really appreciate their support. We have a Cafe Press site where you can get some swag, if you like, t-shirts and some other items. That's cafepress.com/theuavdigest.
So I guess with that, I'd like to say thanks, Tim, for joining us on the show. I hope you had a good time and maybe you'll come back in the future.
I'd love to. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
So this is Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly. Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.